Good morning. I'm Joe Clement for the Old Mole Variety Hour. A couple weeks ago, I reported on workers fighting for a living wage at Fort Vancouver Regional Libraries. We'll report updates when they come up, but you can continue to support FVRL workers by signing their petition, emailing the library board, and showing up at or live streaming the board meeting on the third Monday of the month. We'll share all that information when the show's posted. Tomorrow, April 9th, is National Library Workers' Day, and this whole week is National Library Week. The theme this year is Ready, Set, Library, with the idea being to turn library from a noun into a verb, highlighting the many ways people do library, a theme we'll return to later. If you're wondering, though, why it's library worker instead of librarian, Ben Webster offers this in his 2013 essay for Viewpoint magazine, Notes of a Library Worker. Quote, "To write of the library worker runs the risk of collapsing the extreme variety of labor performed in these institutions. First, there are a variety of types of libraries, typically subdivided as public, school, academic, or special libraries, that serve different populations and have vastly different types of holdings. Second, each library itself has a division of labor, often complex and highly variegated. The gap between a page in an underfunded urban public library and an archivist at an elite research library may be such that their experiences are mutually unintelligible. Despite this heterogeneity, I believe that the category of the library worker, as opposed to, say, the library page, cataloger, or children's librarian, is useful. It emphasizes the shared working identification with the library, institutions which, despite their variety, have coherence in the social imagination." End quote. Libraries in their diverse species are under attack. Book challenges have risen in the last several years, and by over 90% in 2023 alone. What's more is they are increasingly coming from organized groups like Moms for Liberty. Book bans have been enacted by states, cities, and schools, while some libraries are being defunded and disbanded. In 2022, the city manager of Huntsville, Texas, closed the city library to remove books and dismantle the LGBTQ display. And then last year, the city council voted to privatize management through library systems and services. You might remember them because I reported on them a couple weeks ago as the former employer of the new director of Fort Vancouver Regional Libraries. Also locally, Portland Public Schools is cutting dozens of library staff and open hours. A read-in protest will happen at the next school board meeting on April 23rd. At the Matthew Prophet Education Center in Inner North Portland at 501 North Dixon Street. In the media, though, these attacks tend to be framed as a sensational culture war, but below the surface, the mole roots at the class war. Writing for Truthout about how attacks on libraries are attacks on labor, Jamie Taylor argues for a more worker-centric understanding of the situation. Quote, "What we see now are concerted attacks not just on books and authors, but on the expertise of library workers. Nobody knows this better than rank-and-file library workers. If libraries are the terrain of struggle, we are the people most directly involved in the fight. Our efforts are made all the more difficult when our institutions actively work against us. Alongside the very public efforts to ban books from library shelves, library workers face a host of other challenges that directly impact our capacity to do the work necessary to preserve these institutions." End quote. Jamie then describes library management busting the, spoiler alert, ultimately successful union drive in Baltimore County libraries and attacks like what I described already, but then goes on to include, quote, "Core library functions, including collection development and resource description, are contracted out to for-profit private companies that lock us into expensive systems we don't control. These issues may not be as well discussed as Breitbart calling us all groomers, but they are every bit as insidious, stripping our institutions of the very people best positioned to save them. Libraries are crucial social infrastructure. Like the post office, they're a site for the circulation of public goods, such as books and films, but also tax forms, overdose prevention medications, such as Narcan, and COVID tests. Like parks, library buildings produce space for the public where anyone can use the bathroom, grab some computer time, sit down, stay warm in the cold, and cool in the heat. And like all social infrastructure, libraries are under attack from an organized right that knows well that the best way to crater public institutions is to relentlessly attack them until they become unusable, leading to their abandonment by everybody except those who have no other choice. We need a strong library workforce equipped to resist the dismantling of our public institutions." End quote. Libraries are attacked by reactionary right-wing forces from without, but also from within, by managers and public officials who use technology to cut costs by squeezing labor, devaluing collections, re-enclosing library commons through corporate outsourcing. Mariam Kaba is the author of the book Let This Radicalize You and co-founder of For the People, the leftist library project, which aims to systematically research, document, and guide people to access mechanisms of democratic library governance through library boards and different levels of government to push a pro-people, pro-library agenda. She riffs on this theme of libraries under attack with the authors of the book Health Communism on their podcast Death Panel and starts cooking on commenting.
I've been arguing that the public library is probably the last U.S. institution where the word commoning makes any sense at all. And it's for that reason for me that public libraries are important sites of struggle for leftists. And that because public libraries are communal goods, that under capitalism, these goods are always at risk of being privatized or plundered or extracted. And this is precisely why they are under attack by the reactionary right wing. I feel like without that being the center, the free speech stuff is just not it. That's not why they are the center fight for the right. The right has a larger project, y'all, that has been a long-term investment. And we aren't in the same way so explicitly clear about that. You know, we on the left, at least I thought, that our goal in part was to refuse the forced conversion of life forms into market relations, that was a central value, that we do not want a commodified public library, right? And more importantly, that our goal should be to encourage and expand democratic public control over all our institutions. Like, these are things that I think we somehow, if you talk to people on the left, like, people agree with, but we aren't making it central to our fight and constantly talking about it in the same way that the right is committed to having an ideological and material struggle against these institutions. And for me, I've been thinking a lot. Brett Story, who I really appreciate a lot, who's an abolitionist thinker and filmmaker, did 12 Landscapes in Prison Land. I think it's the name of the film. I have to find the exact thing. I'm sure we can find it and put a link for people. I heard her giving a talk a few years ago, and she mentioned this thing that has stuck with me all the way since. She said that a lot of us in this current moment, like, we don't have a vocabulary or a grammar for the commons anymore. So that means that what's been lost to us is the commons as a way of thinking about, she said, how we belong to each other. And that to me was like, yes. Because for me, interdependence, belonging to each other, all those things are such important, crucial planks in the left political project. And we don't know how to have that conversation in public anymore. We don't have that conversation in explicit terms in common anymore. And libraries, to me, can actually help us to rediscover a grammar for the commons. And that's something we desperately need as we build towards, for me, an abolitionist horizon. So I feel very strongly that the institution of the public library, therefore, is just incredibly important to the broader, larger project on the left in this moment and moving forward. And that's in part why it's so essential for me, especially for young folks who did not grow up steeped in the ideas of commoning or in the ideas of a grammar and a vocabulary for the commons, and aren't steeped in and haven't grown up in a society where our interest is in pushing for an understanding of how we belong to each other. That claiming that space back for this is going to help develop the muscles we need for demands for more public institutions, more public goods. It gives us the grammar for understanding Medicare for all. It gives us the vocabulary for making demands that are beyond individualistic ones and that tell us that we deserve to have public goods that are shared in common for everybody.
This is Joe Clement for the Old Mole Variety Hour. We were just listening to Mariam Kaba, abolitionist, library activist, community organizer, and author, talking about the grammar of commons and the social political significance of libraries for the left today and beyond. This connection between libraries and commoning is exactly what the Wrong Boys of the utopian sketch comedy podcast Seriously Wrong have spun into a comprehensive and fun political ideology they call library socialism. Taking the lending library as an intuition pump for socialist economic relations, they develop a set of strategic concepts from dissident Marxist Murray Bookchin's 1982 book, The Ecology of Freedom. Here's a clip of Seriously Wrong host Sean Voyer summarizing it on the leftist library worker podcast, Library Punk. Co-host Justin sets him up.
So did you want to do an introduction to library socialism at the base level and sort of introduce the groundwork concepts? Because I imagine we have one or two listeners who are probably screaming at their phones right now just at the idea of library socialism.
Hi, Steve.
Like, if you work in libraries, and we've talked a lot about like liberal ideology in libraries and democratic discourse in libraries, and so we're always very critical of romanticizing the idea of libraries. It's kind of one of our major things is trying to undermine most of the liberal ideology in the field. And I think that also has made us a little jaded to any kind of utopian thinking about libraries, but it's actually important to do. We used to have the fully automated luxury gay space communism. Yeah. And then Grimes
ruined
it.
Which we now just turned into our action oriented question. It's all boring now.
Yeah. Well, Grimes ruined the joke.
She did. Elon Musk. Swear to God.
Yeah. So library socialism, it's something we first started sort of describing in 2018 or 2019. And basically what we're attempting to do with it is describe a counter-hegemony, a utopian set of ideas that can be used to challenge neoliberalism, capitalist realism, and so on, to help people imagine a society that is radically different than our own, a society that people would actually want to live in. And we think that's an important thing to imagine the future that you want to be a part of as part of the process of creating it. And where it came from was, I was thinking about social ecologist Murray Bookchin talks about how the ecological crisis is a social crisis, that the ecological crisis that we face is a result of social relations. It's the brutal hierarchy of society that creates a situation where a small amount of people are making decisions that affect the entire biosphere and so on. So I was sort of thinking about that. And so we have these like two big crises, both caused by that sort of, you know, neoliberal ideology, this everything must be markets, private property is natural, and so on. And it really clicked that the principle of usufruct, so a property relationship where you can use things and you can benefit from them, but you're not allowed to destroy it. It's not private property, it's a sort of commons property, is something that can address both of those issues at once. Because under the current system, we have too many resource throughputs causing an ecological crisis, and people don't get what they need at the same time. So we're overproducing and under-delivering under the current system. So we were sort of thinking about post-scarcity and what it would mean to have a society where everyone was able to get what they need. And that circulating property of usufructian property relations really resonated with us. And the natural metaphor that we leaned into on that was libraries, because libraries already exist and they function on this same logic that we share books. Everyone gets a chance to read the book. No one's allowed to destroy the book. And we don't hoard books. We share them and so on. So that's the basic idea of library socialism, is that we can address the ecological crisis and the social crisis through changing property relations to a usufructian one along the lines of the public library. And in practice, public libraries are very complex. They exist in the real world. They're not a perfectly democratic utopian thing in every instance. Totally want to acknowledge that. But it is a good intuition pump, I think, for the majority of people. Libraries are a very popular institution when you compare them to other institutions in society. There's a lot of institutional distrust, but libraries people still like. So without abridging our critique of libraries as they actually exist, I think they can be a useful intuition pump for creating that counter-hegemonic narrative for what are we actually searching for when we want to radically recreate society.
That was Sean Voyer talking about library socialism on the leftist library worker podcast, Library Punk. There are hundreds of community tool libraries around the country, more than a few in Portland, as well as more non-traditional collections being offered by public libraries, including the Letting Library of Milwaukee, Beaverton City Library, Hillsborough Public Library, Tigard Public Library, Cedar Mill and Bethany Community Library, Lake Oswego Public Library, Oregon City Public Library, all of which can be used interchangeably by patrons of any of these library systems, as well as Multnomah County, which is good because Multnomah County Library doesn't yet have a library of things. Berkeley Public Library, though, operates the largest public tool library in the country. They have tens of thousands of items. A few weeks ago, Berkeley City Council voted to expand its tool library and develop a share hub. Summer Choi of the Daily Californian reports, quote, "The recommendation to develop Berkeley Public Library's first share hub was approved at Tuesday's council meeting to expand the lending library into a center for community members to access services and supplies. The recommendation was drafted by council member Sophie Hahn, who initiated the idea and worked with the heads of Berkeley libraries. After years of working with Berkeley libraries and authoring the city's plastics ordinance, she noted, the recommendation is a clear way for Berkeley residents to reduce their waste. Hahn said, I want to create a public system for vastly increasing our ability as Berkeley residents to share and reuse a wide variety of items and thereby support our zero waste goals. But I also want to help the library build on its existing tool lending program and make that collection even more relevant and expansive. End quote. This move finally takes seriously the bold mandate of the American Library Association's Statement on Sustainability from 2019, which includes, in adopting sustainability as a core value of librarianship, ALA recognizes the findings in the latest report of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. The report, written and edited by 91 scientists from 40 countries who analyzed more than 6,000 scientific studies in October 2018, found that the immediate consequences of climate change are far more dire than originally predicted, calling for a transformation of the world economy at a speed and scale that has no documented historic precedent. End quote. That brings us back to this year's National Library Week theme, Ready, Set, Library, and the question it poses to us, how do you library? For the Old Mole Variety Hour, I'm Joe Clement. Links to everything will be shared when today's show is posted. Please check out the excellent podcasts Seriously Wrong, Library Punk, and Death Panel.